Hello, and welcome to Living with Dying, the podcast where we try to break the taboos around death and dying and learn to talk about it. Thank you if you've been listening since the beginning, and if you have, you'll know we've covered so many aspects of death and dying, from what it's actually like to die, to how it feels to lose your nearest and dearest, the different ways grief can strike, the different ways we cope or don't with loss, how counselling can help, what part faith can play, how to help others going through grief, and how to pick up the pieces and rebuild a life after a big loss. Well, today I'm really delighted to be joined by my first ever transatlantic guest, Chris Buchanan, who's joining us from Seattle. And Chris is a speech and language therapist who obviously deals with young people a lot. And she's written an amazing book for young people who might have lost a friend. And this was sparked off by an experience of yours, wasn't it, Chris? I think that's how it started.
Yes, I knew Corey. He was a young man I knew very well. And when he passed away, it was very upsetting and surprising. And he was a perfectly healthy young man, and he was throwing up and he couldn't stop throwing up. So his mom took him to the hospital. It turns out he had appendicitis, and they, removed the appendix, and then it was just sort of the recovery, and then he would come home. But things seemed to keep going worse and worse, and he ended up in the ICU. And so it took 50 days, and all his friends were posting things on social media about, you know, little videos to him and you got this, come home soon. And then he passed away. And I had never experienced somebody going in the hospital and not coming out. So it was upsetting to me. And a lot of his friends have different abilities. And so they knew him from Special Olympics or the theater group they all did. So he had hundreds of friends, a lot of whom were either nonverbal or developmentally delayed. And I had seen all their posts and I thought, how are these guys going to deal with the grief and how upsetting this is? So I know when I was young, I would always turn to books for how do I deal with this situation that I really don't want to talk to anyone about? I want to kind of deal with it privately. So I went to the library and bookstores to try to find a book with very few words that talked about it very simply, but not babyish, because these guys were high school and basically almost 25, some of them. And I couldn't find anything that wasn't a ton of words. And when I open a book with a ton of words, my stomach does flip-flops. I shut it. I'm a slow reader, so I need just a few words to kind of help. So I decided to make that book for them.
And so, can you describe it? I mean, I've read it. Well, I've seen a video of you reading it. So we will mention that that's on YouTube, and it's called R.I.P. Corey. Mm-hmm. And that's what people must do if they want to know more about it. But can you just tell me a bit more about how, because it's very pictorial, isn't it?
It's very pictorial. In fact, like I said, I've been a speech therapist for 24 years, and the kids, a lot of kids, some of are nonverbal. Others are cognitively, 3 and 4 year old, even though they might be 15 years old. And a lot of them can't even read at all. So I wanted the whole story to be like a picture book where you can tell by every picture what's going on. So it's a short graphic novel. It's only 50 pages. It also is supposed to be like graphic novel. So it's somewhat like contraband. It's not a teaching book that's a chore or homework. So I thought the kids might actually look at it. And if I only put a few words per page and a lot of pictures, then they could really get it. So it starts off the day Corey died. And it looks like a young kid's journal. Well, like a high schooler's journal. And it says, August 29th, 2018, Corey died today. I don't know what to say. There are no words. And it shows him breathing, or them breathing, trying to figure out what to write. And then they say, I'm having a really hard time right now. And then they start telling the story of who Corey was and how long they've known him and some of these great times they've had together. So it looks very comic book style there for only about 6 pages. Then it goes into the darker time in the hospital and that little mini story of how awful that was. And that was about 6 pages. And then we're back to the journal. And so Sam, the main character, says, who's representing me. So it's a fictionalized version of, well, all of us who were grieving Corey. It says, and that brings us back to today, the day after Corey died. I heard writing down my feelings might help me get through this. So then basically they walk you through their journal and it's dated. It has lots of doodles about the dreams they have that Corey shows up in and the funeral. Actually, it was a memorial. And then the help they start to get, like from grief counselors and a grief group and a goodbye letter. Anyway, and so it goes on. And then at the end, there are the main character asks the reader, thanks for listening. You know, what about you? Did someone you love die? And then there's a yes or a no. And then there's a page full of emojis. So someone nonverbal could point to what they're feeling at that moment. They could point to the part in the journal, let's say about the dream, if they had just had a dream. And so then the person who's with this nonverbal person could say, oh, are you thinking about daddy? Did you have a dream about daddy? Then they can try to process. So I made it to be almost like an AAC device that's called augmentative alternative. You know, those buttons that some people who are nonverbal can, it'll talk for them. So the person could just point to some of these things that they might be thinking or feeling at the moment. And at the end is the true story part that a lot of young kids really get into, the fact that it's based on a true story. And there's a photo of me and Corey. And the lion, he made me with his own hands. And the teddy bear we got at the memorial, that it rides in my back seat. So I think of Corey every day still. And that was now 5 years ago. And then, of course, a picture of Corey's mom, who is thrilled to have the book. So it's sort of like a little bit of him is still here, which we all know he's here with us in our hearts. But
you miss him in person.
Oh gosh, I still miss him every day. And I still, and his mom, of course, you know, so yeah.
And what kind of reaction have you had, Chris, from young people?
Well, I start reading and they almost immediately start talking about someone they know who died, which is the whole point of the book. and they'll tell me, you know, whatever is on their mind. Sometimes it's a bit more distant, like my dad's friend died and we went to the funeral and it was, you know, kind of weird or whatever, because that's a kind of a foreign experience for a lot of kids who haven't been to one yet. So that has been the experience, is they just start talking about stuff, or they'll tell me the parts they like, or they'll start drawing one. And so that's why I actually made another, I don't know if you saw it, but I made a grief journal for the kids. So it's like the same book, but I whited out everything. So you could put in your person who passed away if you were a young person. And then it's just a bunch of pages with like thought bubbles and picture frames and speech bubbles and lists. And even if you were nonverbal, you could just use this to make whatever you want. But anyway, it does have prompts in there, like what, you know, the events you're going to miss, what I'm mad about, things people said that I didn't like, things that make me feel better, who I can talk to, stuff like that. And, you know, it's kind of weird, like our whole society has gone somewhat to images with all these emojis, and which is nice because that's actually inclusive. Like I can express to you the thought that's in my head by drawing it. And that's what I've started to do a lot in therapy, is I have the pens and paper there. And as soon as they come in, if I'm telling them something, I just start drawing what I'm saying. And then they start talking about my drawing right away, or they start drawing something else. Like it, I think it should go like this, or they just draw whatever. And then we end up talking about what they're drawing about. But for the kids who are less verbal, visually is definitely how they are going to express themselves. So I remember when I worked in a school and I had more clients who were less verbal, you know, we had pictures everywhere pretty much. Like, and if you have this grief situation happening, you could pick out pictures that you would say, for example, like you could even use these grief support questions they always ask, like, what makes me feel better, for example. And let's say for you, it would be a bath or jogging or music. And then you find pictures of that out of magazines or online and have them lying around for the your person who's nonverbal to pick up the pictures, glue them on, show you. Yeah.
Gosh, it must be so difficult for nonverbal people if they don't have someone like you or something like your book to work with when they lose someone, because where do they put their grief?
That's what I want to know. I'm hoping they're getting therapy. You know, they have their family who have been communicating with them for all those years. And so they kind of have a nonverbal way they all interact. Like I see the parents sort of read the young person's body language and know, oh, he's whatever, but you know, he's feeling this way and he needs this. But yeah, I don't think we can get to a lot of the layers of feeling. I think maybe sometimes things like art or music might touch into that more. We could also play like audiobooks for them so they can hear all of this.
I can see that both your book and your journal are ideal ways for parents, family, specialists like you to help young people get out their feelings in whatever way they can.
Mm-hmm. And there are lots of great books, especially for children. And that's what I wanted to bring up is a lot of times, like let's say you have a 20-year-old, if they're cognitively more like a 4-year-old, you can't, if you talk to them like anything older than 4, they're not going to understand you. So you have to say to yourself, do I want them to understand what I'm saying right now? Or do I not? Like, you know how parents will sometimes spell what they don't want the person to understand. Well, if you don't, then keep talking up high. But if you do, you have to be extremely clear. You have to lower your language like you're talking to a 4-year-old. Like I've seen this happen a lot when parents will be in my office and we'll be talking about the stranger danger situation or something like that. And the parent will say, oh, well, you know, you can't do that. It's not safe. And we try to teach a kid what safe means, but that's really a vague word, right? There's a railing up high in my office that kids want to go walk on that walkway and it's really not safe. So I'll say, do you want to fall down and be flat as a pancake? Like you can't even move? And I know it's scary and gross. And like even with the cars, with my daughter, I had to say, when a car hits you, you will be all bloody. Do you want that? And parents cringe at that. Like they don't want to say that to their sweet child. But if we don't, we're not teaching them anything. The same thing with grief. You know, he died. We will not see him again. And I was just reading that around the age of 3 to 5, kids don't even really get how permanent that is. So they'll keep asking, when's daddy coming back? And, you could have a 28-year-old, if their cognitive level is 4, they're going to keep asking when sister who passed away is coming back. And so you just, there's not much you could do except have the patience and realize that they just are not understanding she's not coming back. And you could try to express it visually then, you know, like however it would work for you, like take a picture of her and maybe put it, I don't know, in the ground or whatever, like they can't come back, like jail. They're sort of trapped somewhere. And even though they want to come back, they can't. So you see how like visual, otherwise they are wondering why she won't come back and see me. So you have to make it very clear. They literally can't, just like you would a 4-year-old.
So it strikes me that everything you're saying applies to small children as well and would be very
for
useful.
Sure. Oh, yes. That's where I was headed too, is there are picture books for small children. Of course, there are several. And I was thinking I do have a list of them if you wanted me to get you the list that I have discovered in researching the book. But one, there's two really great ones. If one is called An Ordinary Day. It really is good for the whole, it's like perspective for preschoolers is what I would say. Like, okay, this is a fact of life that everything does die and things are born, like the whole life cycle thing. So it's really good perspective. It's a great one. A very visual, also very few words, picture book, beautiful. And so it doesn't say exactly that it's about death and grief on the title and stuff. So I think it might fly under the radar. It's not like grief or death in the title. It just says An Ordinary Day. That's a good one. And then there's one called Cape. Also doesn't say grief or death, but it is adorable, about a young boy whose father died and how he uses his cape to sort of protect him from the memories. He doesn't want to remember because he's still upset. hadn't had the funeral yet. And then they have the funeral in the book. And that's another good thing is books that actually portray the whole funeral situation so that the child, you prepare them for what's about to happen this week or whatever. But like I've been hearing on your podcast, the whole point of your podcast is we'd be talking about. So all of these books could be covered just all the time and beforehand, years before they're ever needed. So that it just seems perfectly normal that this is how it goes. Just like we talk about a lot of other things, especially if there's a divorce or adoption or a lot of other things, all the things going on in the news and stuff, you know, you have to do it at their level and everything and not overwhelm them. And that's what I've noticed too. As soon as I'll start I'll get to something, you know, pretty serious, pretty heavy, and they'll talk about whatever, like Pokemon or whatever. They come in and out in a flash. And you just need to go with that. I mean, I wouldn't keep dragging them back. That's just, they're like, I've had enough. I can't deal with anymore. Let's go do something else. And the book Cape, about a young boy whose father died. I actually read that one with an 18-year-old who had severe autism. And so he rarely generates sentences on his own. He usually just repeats what he just heard, which is called echolalia. And his father had died a couple of years earlier, before I even started seeing him. And he was just learning to read. So I put this picture book, Cape, in front of him and I had him read it. And I had never really been sure what he was understanding because he couldn't really reply on his own. And when he finished reading the book, he had tears rolling down his eyes, really rolling down his face. And I had never seen him cry before, ever. So I said, do you want to talk about it? And he said, no. And of course, if he had echolalia, so he would have said, talk about it. But he didn't say that. He was very clear. So it's just an example of the power of these books. There was one more that's really good. It's called The Dead Bird, where the kids find it's, and it's a picture book. So it's cartoony, sort of, you know, drawn. And well, so is an Ordinary Day and Cape. But they find a dead bird at the park and then they have a little ceremony for it. And so that's kind of nice because it's not even like they were emotionally attached to this bird. They'd never even seen it, but it goes through kind of what will happen at a funeral in a very detached way. I mean, somewhat detached. Kids are still attached to a dead bird. So, that's a good one.
I've written a note of those, An Ordinary Day, Cape, and A Dead Bird. In a nutshell, what you're doing, your life's work really is to explain things, isn't it, to people who are nonverbal or less verbal. But, I mean, that's, like I was trying to say earlier, that's so useful for everyone, isn't it, really? And I wondered if you could give us some tips on how we should be talking to. I mean, you've described how you would try and do it in pictures, but what other kind of language do you think we should use with young people to be open about it rather than using some of the euphemisms that we do?
Oh, well, for sure, you need to be concrete and short words. So definitely, I wouldn't say we lost him, because then the kid is wondering, why aren't we out looking for him? So don't say anything that you don't actually literally mean. Even passed away, the only thing my kids knew about passing was on the cars on the freeway. So this isn't making any sense that grandpa passed. He was driving. So you see how quickly and easily they'll get lost. So I would use the shortest words, the fewest words, the exact concrete words. And this could get difficult, I know, explaining whatever you want them to know, let's say, about the circumstances of the death. But from a language perspective, I would just say keep it simple and be quiet. That's the best thing, is just be quiet for a little bit. And then the kid will usually say something because they're trying to make sense of it. And then it's best to let them say something, because then you can address what they're actually thinking about. Because if we're talking over here about something they're not even thinking about, it's really not registering and it's possibly only making it worse. So you really want to let them kind of tell you what they're thinking about this situation. And then you can help them, you can sort of clarify it again in as few words as possible. And in general, what I found is as less judgmentally as possible to let the child figure out, you know, for themselves. And they'll probably keep asking questions until they've had it, probably only two or three. And then they're like, and then they'll ask you again the next day or a week later or whatever. So I definitely wouldn't overload them like with the whole story. Like what I just said there might be it for a day. I've seen some kids who they might not bring up what's going on in their head. You really don't know what's going on in their head. And those are the ones I would definitely bring this up. And what they'll do is they'll, if they want to talk about it, they'll say something or ask something about it. If they don't want to, they will like ignore you. They just won't answer, or they'll talk about something totally different. So you're almost like testing the water. Like, and I would really definitely talk about it. That's actually the main reason I wrote the book, is because after Corey died, I thought to myself, did all of this just happen? Because nobody was really talking about it. Because I, you know, I wasn't like in the family. I was like a friend. And so my friends didn't really know about it. And so I was thinking, did we just go through that hell, or had no validation that it happened? And so that's part of why I wrote the book. Like, yes, you guys, you did go through this. Look at, it's right here in, on paper. He was here, you know, because you could start to wonder, will I forget about him too? That's why anything you can make remembering with their t-shirt, their stuff, great. But yeah, he really was here. We really did go through that. I really will. And then at the end, they go hook up for pizza for his Corey's third birthday. So we really will keep remembering him. He won't just fade away to nothingness. And it really did happen.
That's a really good point, because it does feel like, I don't know, a tunnel sometimes, doesn't it? And you don't know whether you're ever going to get out of it. And then afterwards you look back and you think, oh, was it really like that? Am I remembering it correctly?
Mm-hmm. So, of course, children do too.
Yeah, it seems to me that your book would be so useful for every child, not just for the nonverbal, but for any child who's coping with grief. Both books, so that they first of all look at the pictures in the first one and read about that, and then go on and do their own journal for the other one. Would you like to give me their titles and how we can get hold of them, please? Before
sure. And actually, to mention too, I did a Kickstarter for this, which is a crowdfunding campaign, and some of the people, you know, who got their complimentary book have already passed it on to a friend of theirs who passed away. And I'm talking, we are like 60-year-old, 50s, 60s. So like I have this male friend, his male friend, I guess a friend of his died or something. And he gave him the book. Anyway, I've had two males about age 50 who have totally loved this book. I mean, no delays in their mind, and they're not children. So I was excited to hear it's helping people of all ages. So
everyone, yeah.
You could find it at Amazon. I also have eBooks and audiobooks. You can find it at my website, which is chrisbuchanan.xyz. Now, if you go to my website, I literally sign it, pack it up, and ship it. So I'm not really shipping to the UK. So that's why I mentioned Amazon and eBooks. On my website, though, there's a study guide, which is like discussion questions. Yet the journal itself sort of is that, like, where are you now? Why does it hurt so much? When will the pain stop? And all the you can also go to just Kickstarter and type in RIP Corey, and you'll see like the 43 updates of how this book came to be.
So that's the first book, RIP Corey. And the second one, the journal is called?
It's called RIP __. If you just type that into Amazon, that's the only place you can get that one, because that's just print on demand. It's only like $5 US. So you type RIP __ and maybe teen grief journal, and it'll show up.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all that with us, Chris. It's fascinating talking to you.
Oh, thank you, Dillis. I really want these kids to get the communication and the help that they need and deserve.
It feels so important, and it's such a lovely, easily accessible way of talking to someone about grief, isn't it?
Yeah, I was hoping it would just be sitting in people's homes and in classrooms on the shelf, just like kind of like the puberty books, just sit there for when the need arises.
Yeah.
And a kid could look at it on their own. But yes. And then the great thing too is empathy from the other kids. You know, if a child's been out due to a death in the family and they come back, that whole classroom really should have read something about grief and what this child's gone through so they can be good friends.
So, Chris Buchanan, thank you so much for talking to me. That's been really illuminating. And thank you for being our first transatlantic guest.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an honor.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.